Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, May 29th, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is the cutting board column titled Strawberries Spring to Mind, Fruit Picked Fresh on Local Farm, a Treat of the Season. There are many things to love about spring. The birds are chirping, the sun is shining, and the strawberries are in. Oh yes, lovely little bright semi-sweet and tart strawberries. I cannot get enough of them. Apparently, neither can my sister's one-year-old. She sent me two pictures not too long ago, one with my niece in her little chair, grinning her little cheesy grin with a ruby-red strawberry in front of her. The next featured the same scene, but the little one's face was now covered in red juice, and she was smiling rather menacingly, a pseudo-horror tableau that I have affectionately called the bloodbath. Anyway, Claire Mikrut is the manager at O'Rourke Family Gardens in Holder. They have been a staple at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market for years now, raising their canopy on Main Street just south of Jefferson Street and selling all manner of produce. Last Friday, Mikrut invited Clay Jackson and me to the farm to see their strawberry patches and get a tour of their other fields, including asparagus, tomatoes, onions, garlic, sweet corn, and popcorn. We're not in peak season yet. I would say next Friday will be, but this is like our first picking of them, she said, showing us two strawberry fields, one an early variety and one a later. Yes, that means I got strawberries from the O'Rourkes before anyone else. But that next Friday, you see, is today, May 29th. So roll up your sleeves, because this week on the cutting board, we are going strawberry picking. According to the University of Illinois Extension, strawberries are among the most common domesticated berries in Illinois. However, unlike other berries, they require much less maintenance. Botanically, they technically are aggregate accessory fruit, not berries, but go with it. Mikrut's strawberry patches were moved about 4 years ago to their current location, she said, and you do not harvest in the first season. We got the beds ready with compost and stuff, but after that, they kind of just do their own thing, she said. There is a drip tape underneath there if we ever need to irrigate, but usually in the springtime, we get enough rain. They do not spray the fields with fertilizers, herbicides, or pesticides, and weeding is difficult in the early season because so many of the plants are still blooming, Mikrut said. If they're blooming, I don't want to step in the blossoms, she said, and then in the fall, I'm just too busy with everything else. I don't get time. Mikrut picks all the strawberries by hand, kneeling in the field of vines and searching for the ones that are just ripe. It only took about a minute before she handed me a full quart. Unlike store-bought strawberries that can sometimes be the size of a toddler's fist, these early season ones are much smaller, averaging about the size of a marble. But let me tell you, hot dog, are they tasty? These little guys are bursting with flavor, the very essence of springtime. So let's make something with them. Now, we've had strawberries here on the cutting board before and made jam with them. This time, I want to share something even simpler. As is my wont, I was staring out the window the other day, transfixed by the mural painted on Red Raccoon Games' south wall on Jefferson Street. It features anthropomorphic movie theater snacks like popcorn and a soda. In my head, I sang that terrible jingle, "Let's all go to the lobby, let's all go to the lobby." But have you seen the price of movie theater snacks? I said to myself, "Self, you can make something cheaper, cleaner, tastier, and dare we say, healthier." So we're going to make some strawberry lemonade and popcorn ourselves. To start with the lemonade, I took the juice of 6 lemons for the base, and then I blended up a little more than half the quart of strawberries. What? I got snacky, and they are super good. I added the lemon juice and blended some more, and then I passed this through a fine mesh strainer into a glass pitcher. I filled the pitcher with cold filtered water and let it sit a spell. After about 30 minutes, I stirred it up and poured myself a glass. However, during that time, I made myself some popcorn. Remember how I said the O'Rourke's grow popcorn? Well, they sell a few varieties at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. They harvest the popcorn in the fall and dry it out, Mikrit said. So the one-pound bag of white popcorns that she sold me was harvested last year. Well, back to the kitchen. A quarter cup of unpopped corn should be enough for one serving. If you have a hot air popcorn maker, we have two, this works great. If you have an old-school stovetop popcorn contraption, like a Whirly Pop, these are also super fun. But the cool thing about popcorn is you just need a pan with a tightly sealing lid. If the lid isn't that tight, just cover with aluminum foil and then the lid. And this method creates hot steam that will pop the corn. For my single portion, I added a tablespoon of corn oil to a pot and set it over medium-high heat. Then I added my corn and a pat of butter. You can wait to add butter, but I like it to brown as it gives the popcorn a more complex flavor. Cover and shake. Don't leave it on the heat for more than 20 seconds without shaking. You can count in your head, but I have an analog clock in my kitchen. Shake, 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 and shake some more. After a few minutes, the kernels will start to pop, and keep shaking. After about 5 minutes, remove from the heat and uncover to let the moisture out, and salt to taste. And look at that! I have movie snacks, and all it took was a trip to a farm, a daydream about talking sodas, and some elbow grease. The popcorn was light and crunchy with a deep flavor from the brown butter, and my goodness, was that strawberry lemonade refreshing. Crisp, light, tart, and spirit-lifting. You can add sugar if you must, but it doesn't need it at all. Well, I'll see you on the next one. Wait, how much is a small popcorn again? And if you are a farmer or a producer and would like to talk with me for this column, call me at 309-820-3275 or email daniel.alkire@lee.net. And be sure to check back next time to find out what we are chopping up on the cutting board. Our next front page story is about the state of Illinois, titled Budget Talks Nearing Deadline, Gas Tax and Looming Shortfalls Take Focus. This is a Capital News Illinois story, Dateline Springfield. Illinois lawmakers are days away from passing a roughly $56 billion fiscal year 2027 budget, but many are still fighting to have their priorities included as negotiations near the end. Republicans want to reduce the size of the budget and lower taxes, while some Democrats are seeking more taxes on businesses and billionaires, and others are looking to maintain state programs, fearing future budget holes and social service cuts in the coming years. The budget became more complicated earlier this month when analysts for the General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget office lowered revenue projections for the upcoming fiscal year that begins July 1. The revisions by the governor's office revealed a $149 million gap between what Pritzker proposed spending and the amount of revenue the state will have to support it, and that includes $728 million in new taxes and revenue changes proposed by the governor. Though the clock is ticking toward the Sunday night deadline, negotiations over the final product are still happening behind the scenes. When we look at Springfield, a week can be a month and a day can be a week, said Senator Robert Peters, Democrat of Chicago, at a news conference on Wednesday. And so a lot can happen and a lot of conversations can happen. But I can say, you know, my guess is this is going to be a tight vote and a tight conversation. Gas tax. Gas prices have topped $5 per gallon in parts of the state, and some lawmakers are calling for a temporary reduction in motor fuel tax to provide relief to drivers. Pritzker suggested on Tuesday that lawmakers could suspend the automatic gas tax increase of about 2 cents per gallon that happens annually on July 1st. We for sure should be looking at what we can do to diminish the impact of high gas prices, Pritzker told reporters in Champaign. He cautioned that lawmakers must consider how pausing the increase would impact road construction in the state, which is funded by the gas tax. But he said, we have enough here so that we could make some sort of pause. The road fund had about $4.2 billion as of Wednesday, according to the comptroller's office. Lawmakers also suspended the inflationary increase to the gas tax in 2022 for 6 months during a period of high inflation. Relief for drivers would likely be minimal, however. The tax is set to increase by less than 2 cents per gallon on July 1 to about 50 cents per gallon, according to the Department of Revenue. Republicans are pushing for suspending the sales tax on motor fuel sales, which they argue amounts to double taxation at the pump when combined with the gas tax and would provide greater relief to drivers. The governor has a real initiative that he could show, I care about the cost, by freezing the sales tax, and he has not done that yet, House Republican leader Tony McCombie, Republican of Savannah, told Capital News Illinois. McCombie suggested the large balance in the road fund should be used to fund public transportation if the sales tax on gas is suspended. That sales tax largely funds public transportation beginning this year and closed significant budget gaps for that service. If there is an account in government that has exceeded their expectations, the money should go back to taxpayers, and this is a way for that to happen, she said. Digital ad tax. But many Democrats want to raise upwards of $4 billion in new revenue through tax hikes and eliminating tax credits for job creation. One idea that nearly made it into the budget last year and could have momentum this year is a tax on businesses' digital advertising revenue that proponents say would generate more than $700 million. Business leaders warn that such a tax will hurt small businesses which rely on digital advertising to reach consumers. We understand the need to close budget gaps, but a digital ad tax would make it harder and more expensive for businesses to use digital and social media ads to find customers, sell products, and grow their companies, Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce CEO Jack Lavin said in a statement. The big tech companies are not the ones who are going to be hurt by this. Representative Norma Hernandez, Democrat of Melrose Park, disputed that characterization as her bill could only tax profits from digital ads over $150 million. This is not a tax on small businesses. This is not a tax on working people, she said at a news conference. This is a proposal focused on the largest tech corporations. Corporations making enormous profits off our personal data, our online activity, and targeted advertising generated from Illinois residents. None of the $4 billion worth of progressive revenue ideas were part of Pritzker's budget, although he did propose a $200 million tax on social media companies based on the number of users the platforms have in the state. No Democratic lawmakers at Wednesday's news conference said their budget vote would be contingent upon the new revenue streams. There is one vote that each one of us in this chamber have, Senator Karina Villa, Democrat of West Chicago, said. We each have a button, and we will make the decision individually. One reason many Democrats are advocating for tax increases now is because more significant budget challenges are on the horizon. The state could face a deficit up to $1.5 billion in fiscal year 2028 under current taxing and spending policies, according to February data from the governor's office. Much of that is driven by changes from Washington, that reduce social services or pass costs for those programs to the state. In Washington, we just decided to cut Medicaid by $1 trillion over the next 5 years, so we're not making it any easier for you as members of the legislature, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin said in an address to the General Assembly on Wednesday. Many Democrats hope the state can fill some of those social service gaps and say that is why more revenue is needed now. We think it is unacceptable to sit on our hands and not begin to make progress to change our unfair tax system at a time where we're being attacked by the federal government and at a time where the cost of living is choking families, Representative Lindsay LaPointe, Democrat of Chicago, told Capital News Illinois. We cannot wait to start to bring in progressive revenue. Democrats are also getting pressure from outside groups. How do you close the deficit? You tax the rich, Chicago Teachers Union Vice President Jackson Potter said at Wednesday's news conference. Senate Republicans pushed back on the notation that the state needs more money. Where does it end? How much more do you need? When does it stop? Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, said in response. Senate Republicans have been involved in amicable and courteous conversations, Senator Don DeWitt, Republican of St. Charles, told reporters on Wednesday, but he is worried they will shortly get locked out of negotiations. If history is any guide, Republicans will not see the thousands of pages of final budget language until late on the final day or during the overnight hours of May 31st, DeWitt said. McCombie would also like to see less spending and lower taxes. She said her House GOP caucus has only been briefly part of high-level budget talks with Democratic counterparts. She said the Democrats' call for new taxes flies in the face of their promises of pushing legislation this spring to make life more affordable. It is really quite amazing when they talk about affordability, she said. It is not affordable for people in Chicago. And that's one of the things about increasing the size of government, because they want people to rely on government, and it is not sustainable that way. Republicans also want more financial help for local governments. We cannot continue to try to fund our way through weed and gaming in local municipalities, McCombie said. And our next front page story is about politics. Headlined, Durbin Warns Lawmakers of Divisions. This is a Capital News Illinois story, datelined Springfield. As he closed his address before gathered members of the Illinois General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker in the Illinois Capitol on Wednesday, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin invoked the words of another favorite son of Springfield. Abraham Lincoln, in the House Divided speech that he gave here in Springfield, gave a grim warning that the divisions in America over the issue of slavery could destroy our nation, Durbin, 81, said from the dais of the Illinois House Chamber. We see similar divisions today. The challenge we face in the days ahead could be just as serious, Durbin said, referring to efforts to undermine democratic norms like accepting the outcomes of elections. I hope that those of us blessed to live in this land of Lincoln will remember his warnings in 1858 and his counsel to those who lead this nation in our time. Durbin delivered what was billed as a farewell address, reflecting on his record in office while urging state lawmakers gathered to pick up the torch for the causes that he championed. The East St. Louis native will retire next year after 30 years in the Senate, most of it spent as the chamber's influential number two Democrat. He has been a fixture in Illinois politics for more than a half century, from interning for U.S. Senator Paul Douglas while attending Georgetown University to serving in the U.S. House before his election in 1996 to the Senate seat that Douglas once held. Durbin never served in state elected office, losing a bid for Illinois Senate by less than 2 percentage points in 1976 and for lieutenant governor in a landslide in 1978. But he did work in the Illinois Capitol, serving as parliamentarian of the Illinois Senate in the 1970s. And his influence extends further than that. More than 3,000 worked in Durbin's office, including Representative Cam Buckner, Democrat of Chicago, and Senator Mike Simmons, Democrat of Chicago. Several women in the legislature are alumni of the Illinois Women in Leadership Training Academy, a group co-founded by Durbin's wife, Loretta, for which he provided seed money. Think about the arc of history this man has lived and helped lead, Buckner said. He interned for Paul Douglas in the 1960s. He worked for Paul Simon. He served with Carol Moseley Braun. He later helped guide and mentor Barack Obama. This is not just a resume. This is a bridge across generations of Illinois leadership. Reflecting the infinite game of public policy making, Durbin highlighted some of his top legislative accomplishments while acknowledging the work that remains. He recalled his challenge to big tobacco in the 1980s, referring to it as the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. He remembered catching a last-minute flight that required him to sit in the plane's smoking section. I said, "Isn't there something you can do?" he recalled, asking a gate agent. She said, "No, but Congressman, there is something you can do." So I got on the plane, sat in that center seat between two chain-smoking sumo wrestlers. What did I say? There's got to be a better way. Durbin subsequently introduced legislation that banned smoking on commercial airline flights, eventually getting it passed in 1988. He also touted legislation banning the marketing of tobacco products to children, which he credited with a massive drop in the number of high school students smoking. Before I rest on my laurels, I will tell you that unfortunately, cigarettes have been replaced by vaping, Durbin said, urging lawmakers to do something about it at the state level. Durbin, whose mom was an immigrant from Lithuania, kept her naturalization certification for decades, and he displayed it in the credenza behind his desk in his Capitol office. He said he wanted people to know that he is proud to be the son of an immigrant. Throughout his tenure, Durbin has been the chief champion of proposed legislation that would grant legal status to undocumented people who were brought to the U.S. as children. Known as the DREAM Act, the legislation has been introduced several times but has never passed both houses of Congress. "I'm still committed to the DREAM Act, and I hope that you will join me and recommit," Durbin said, noting that it was once a bipartisan idea and arguing that it should be once more. Durbin was also known for bringing federal dollars back to Illinois. Senator Doris Turner, Democrat of Springfield, credited him with securing the funds for the Springfield Rail Improvements Project, which aims to consolidate all rail traffic through the city's downtown corridor. Durbin joked that one of the most interesting issues he faced was to stop one damn fish from getting to Lake Michigan, a reference to the effort to keep invasive Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. "I cannot tell you how many millions of dollars we spent for poison, for electroshock, for disco bubble machines. We've tried everything, and we've done it," Durbin said, then crediting Pritzker for advocating for the ongoing Brandon Road Interbasin Project. The reception for Durbin was generally warm, with Pritzker, Auditor General Chris Meister, and three of the seven justices of the Illinois Supreme Court joining legislators in the House chamber. Members of the arch-conservative Illinois Freedom Caucus, however, boycotted Durbin's speech. The only good news is that this career politician is finally retiring, said Senator Andrew Chesney, Republican of Freeport. "It is long overdue. Every legislator who actually cares about fixing this state should skip today's political theater and get back to work." Pritzker's campaign called the caucus's boycott disrespectful and an embarrassment to our state. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and former Illinois Republican Party Chairman Don Tracy are their party's nominees to succeed Durbin. Tracy watched Durbin's speech from the gallery while Stratton did not attend. "I want to thank Senator Dick Durbin for his long service to Illinois. We have real policy differences, but I respect his years of dedication to our state," Tracy said in a statement. "This seat has been held for a long time. The question now is what comes next for Illinois. You can respect someone's service and still believe that it's time for a new direction. Reflecting on his upcoming retirement, Durbin said the thing he will miss the most is having the opportunity to help so many people. In closing, my life has been genuinely enriched by helping people from our great state and nation. I hope that yours will be as well, Durbin said. Our last front page story is about the economy, titled U.S. Food Insecurity on the Rise, Research Says. This is a Reuters story, datelined New York. Food-related challenges are surging for America's least well-off residents, and that likely explains the marked rise in a sour consumer mood, despite data showing the economy is overall doing pretty well, new research from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York says. We find a remarkable increase in food insecurity, particularly among lower-educated and lower-income households and households with young children. Bank economists wrote in a blog posting on Wednesday, mounting food-related issues also track a contemporaneous increase in pessimism among lower-income households and a sharp decline in job-finding expectation. The New York Fed said it surveyed Americans on whether they had recently used savings to cover expenses, had trouble finding enough food to eat, or skipped eating altogether, or had received some form of public or private food assistance. It found that between October 2025 and February 2026, there have been meaningful increases in the shares of households reporting facing those conditions. The increases were mostly broad-based across race, age, income, and education groups, but were generally larger for non-whites, lower-income, and lower-educated households, and households with children, the bank economist wrote. The association between food-related challenges and sour consumer sentiment data among lower-income households points to a potential explanation for the unusually low recent levels of consumer sentiment at a time when the hard economic data paint a more positive picture. Pessimism over the economy has emerged as a notable trend in recent months as inflation pressures have heated up again, driven by President Donald Trump's large-scale import tax increases and his Middle East war that has caused a sizable energy shock, joined with increased uncertainty over the future of the economy. Households have also been stressed by the shift of the job market into a low-hire, low-fire scenario that follows what had been a hot hiring sector during the pandemic and its aftermath. Wealthy Americans have been buoyed by rising asset values tied to the stock market, a stable job market, and lower home borrowing costs. Meanwhile, the high inflation pressures that have prevailed since the COVID-19 pandemic have kept pressure on many Americans as key forms of government support have been in retreat. Much of America's current economic strength rests on the spending power of the wealthier economic class. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Panagraph of Friday, May 29th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.